Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we're your hosts. My name is Chris Sims, and with me, as always, is the amazing, spectacular Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you this evening?
I would love to be considered amazing and spectacular. I am not avenging.
You are not avenging. You're not team up.
I'm not a vengeful person. I'm not Peter Parker, nor am I a web of.
I think you're a little bit of a web of.
All right. I'll take it. I'll take that criticism and use it to better myself.
It's not a criticism. It's a compliment.
Okay. Well, thank you for presenting me that different viewpoint. Chris, I'm doing well. I hope you're doing well this week.
Doing okay.
We have a very fun show for everybody. We're talking to our good buddy, Dylan Todd, designer extraordinaire. Designer of many of the logos you see on the stands in comic bookshops this very day. And we're going to be talking to him about comic book logos in what I called in the interview a backdoor pilot for our show Logoria. It's going to be a very fun time.
Yeah, we love to talk about logos, and I'm very excited for Dylan to join us live from a TGI Fridays. That'll yes. make sense in about half an hour.
You're going to hear a little bit of... hockey in the background.
A little bit of HN, a little bit of hockey noise.
I'm going to do my best to make sure that doesn't come through, but you can't do it perfect, everybody. I'm going to do my best. But it's still going to be fun to talk to Dylan, even with that background hockey noise behind him. Before we talk to him, Chris, we've got some business to take care of, starting with thanking some folks, RE Patreon.
That's right, Matt. Now, if you are a listener and you want to support the show, we would love you to do that. And you might be thinking, well, how? How can I support you? You guys aren't in my town. I can't buy you dinner. If we are in your town, buy us dinner, by the way. That would be nice of you. Now, you might be thinking, do I write a check? Do I get a money order? Do I send cash to 406 Gimmick Street? No, friends. You just go to patreon.com/warrocketajax. Where you can kick in as little as a dollar a month to help us keep doing the show, help us keep the lights on, pay those gimmicks they won't stop sending me in the mail called bills.
They never stop. They never cease. There are no new names to read this week, but let me extend a general thank you to all of our Patreon supporters. We could not be at the level we were at without you. We cannot provide you bonus audio. We cannot provide 2-hour monthly Every Story Ever specials. We cannot provide monthly snack situation specials and so much more. All that is because of your support, and we deeply, deeply appreciate it. If you would like to help us out as well, you can head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax. Get all that stuff I just talked about, as well as line-stepping privileges for our ranking segments. And at the highest level, t-shirts. I just sent out a bunch of t-shirts to Patreon supporters at our highest level, and no one else is going to get those t-shirts for an entire year. So that's pretty cool for them. You could be there too. With that, let's do some checks and recs. Chris, what are you checking in with this week?
Well, Matt, the big thing, as it is every year, is that this coming weekend is Heroes Convention. That's right, it's Heroes Con in Charlotte, North Carolina. The city so nice that Ric Flair said it twice.
That's very true. We are both going to be at Heroes Con in Charlotte, right next to each other. Mm-hmm. We will have print issues of Everything Will Be Okay, number one. Our table, which is 1527, is right next to yours, Chris, which is 1528.
That's right. I'll be there at 1528. And to my left will be Mr. Chad Bowers. So if you like War Rocket Ajax, come and say hi to me and Matt. If you like the comics that I've co-written with Chad, come say hi to me and Chad. Maybe say hi to all three of us.
The three Tobies all together.
Three Tobies.
That is a joke we created at the Greenville convention and never said on air. So that's the first time you know that Chris, Chad, and me are the three Tobies.
That convention, Matt, we might have gotten more weird in-jokes out of that convention than any... Like, I know we came up with Vapor Blade at the Oak City Comic Con in Raleigh.
We came up with it before that, but we really fleshed it out there.
Yeah, we did some hard work with Teenie Howard to get Vapor Blade into shape. The Greenville Con brought us the three Tobies.
That's right.
It brought us Chambers.
Yeah, that's where we thought of Chambers.
That's where Chambers comes from.
The second Negan.
The second Negan, who has... Too fast. But yes, what will Heroes Con bring if Raleigh brought us Chambers?
Only time will tell, and you can be right there at Ground Zero for it. We're going to record a live episode there, talking to the Frank Comics guys about their very great new comic.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say it now. Favorite comic of the year. And this year had metal in it.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. But it is very, very good.
Okay. All right. I also, the second favorite after Everything Will Be Okay.
I mean, technically that started last year, so I'll let it slide.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So that's a 2017 favorite.
But yeah, it's going to be a super fun time. And if you're going to be in Charlotte, come see us.
Yeah, come say hi. I'll have copies of everything. I've got a big order coming in at a local comic book store. So if you want the new Army of Darkness paperback that Chad and I wrote, Ash vs. Army of Darkness, came out or will come out on Wednesday. And I will have some of those at the con to sign and sell. So come by, buy something. Say hello to me and Matt. Matt, I assume you're going to have everything as well.
I will have War Rocket Ajax t-shirts. I will have... all my books, including, as I mentioned, issue one of Everything Will Be Okay in print, which is the only single issue I'm going to be printing. So, yeah, plenty of stuff available.
All right. Matt, do you have a check or is it just old Heroes?
I do have an additional check that kind of ties in to the Heroes check, and that is t-shirt related. As I mentioned earlier in the show, because all the new Patreon backer t-shirts have gone out, last year's Patreon t-shirt is now available to everybody. I will have them at HeroesCon, and they are currently now available on our TeePublic store. They are the Alex Smith-designed HQC S-Rank t-shirts that are sort of a parody of the Elvis TCB design. They are great looking shirts. I wear mine around all the time. They let everybody know that you listen to HQC. So either come by and see me at Heroes Con to get one of those shirts if you were not able to pick one up, if you didn't get one through Patreon. Otherwise, you can buy them currently on our TeePublic store. There is a link to our TeePublic store on warrocketajax.com. On every post that we put up, every episode post, you can go buy that shirt anytime you like, along with our numerous other designs that are there on TeePublic. All right, Chris, those are our checks. Let's make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
You know, 10 years we've been doing this show.
Uh-huh.
10 years. And I feel like I had something when I sat down to record tonight, but I don't think I do. I have been hard at work. Getting ready for Charlotte, getting ready for another trip that I have coming up later in the month. So I have done nothing but work, and I also watched Thor Ragnarok the other day. So Thor Ragnarok's pretty good. You should watch that.
It's on Netflix now. I'm pretty sure we've both recommended it on the show.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we have. I swear I had something, and now I don't.
Well, then I will just move on into my recommendation. I probably should have done this earlier so that people could pick it up through PS Plus, because it was on PS Plus in May. It is no longer on PS Plus anymore, but I'm pretty sure it's fairly cheap to buy if you're going to buy it from the PlayStation Store or on Amazon or somewhere. But Chris, I remember back after Mad Max Fury Road came out, when we were talking about Fury Road on the show, you talked about how you had a real interest in playing the Mad Max video game that was coming out.
Yes.
I similarly had an interest in it, but just did not ever pick it up. And then last month, it showed up as a free game on PS Plus. So I downloaded it, and I've been playing it for the past probably week and a half. And it is like as average of an open world, drive a car around and just do stuff kind of game that you can have. Like, to be set in this like post-apocalyptic wasteland, it is so like by the numbers open world video game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of exactly what I needed from a video game right now. Something I can just kind of like, not exactly mindlessly play, but something like I don't have to care about the story. I skip over every cutscene I can skip over because there's really no story in the game to speak of to begin with. And I can just like go around and like, I'll take over this, fuel pump station, or I'll go bust up some war boys and take over their little camp and recover some scrap from it, which scrap is like the currency in the game. Okay, I'll do a story mission now. Like, there's enough freedom and enough to do that I can play it and have fun, but not like be too deeply invested in it. I can listen to podcasts while I play it.
Yeah, I picked that game up back probably about a year ago. It is, I think, honestly, perfectly serviceable is maybe the word for it, but I feel like it's better than a weird kind of, it's kind of a Fury Road tie-in game, which is weird in and of itself.
It seems as though the events of Fury Road have occurred.
Yeah, because the Vinnie Jones character shows up, and right, like the war boys are in it.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's very much a kind of fun, it's interesting, like as you get further into the game. One of the things that I thought was really cool was the first little chunk of the game, like the first area that you're in, is a dried up ocean. And you kind of don't realize that until you get a little bit in it. And then when you get into the second area, you kind of come out and, oh, now you're on like where roads and buildings used to be, which is kind of cool. Which is kind of a good idea.
Yeah, the dried up ocean, you really realize it's a dried up ocean when you start scavenging through ships, like the skeletons of ships that are scattered about the landscape.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like interesting details in it, and the controls are fine. There are a few elements of it that are somewhat annoying. Like trying to take out a convoy is not the most fun.
Yeah.
But for the most part, like I'll go do a race and have fun running a race in the game. It's a good game to not like be so engrossed in that I can't pay attention to anything else while I'm playing it. Like it's not a Zelda Breath of the Wild. And that's okay. Cause Zelda Breath of the Wild is going to demand so much of my attention in a way that this game doesn't. I can just kind of mindlessly play it, which is exactly what I was looking for.
Yeah.
So if you can find that for cheap, definitely grab it up. And if you manage to download it during when it was free on PS Plus, play it because it is a fun time.
Yeah, for free, it's a fantastic game.
All right, Chris. With that, let's talk about some of the comics that came out this week.
Let's do it.
Justice League number one is exactly what I was hoping it would be.
Can we talk about like page one, panel one?
Yes, absolutely. Hit me.
When Cal Kent and Our Man 1 Million show up. Hmm? Yeah, I'm talking about Justice Legion A. I'm talking about our boys from the 853rd century back in action at long last for one panel and one panel only.
I can't help. I could not help but to immediately compare this book to other Justice League's number one that I've read in the past 12 to 15 years. And this one feels so much more right to me. There are a handful of choices in it that I maybe wouldn't have made, but they are very small gripes. Overall, it's such a good comic book, and it's alternately very attuned to like that DC Comics bullshit that we love so much.
Oh yeah, here's who else is on that first page. Commandy.
Yeah.
Dr. Canis, the quintessence.
By the same token, it like is such a back to basics Superman, or such a back to basics Justice League book, or Super Friends kind of thing. It's got the Hall of Justice in it. And it's got Lex Luthor putting together the Legion of Doom by the end of it.
Yeah, it's got that good stuff. And it's. Did you think when metal started, Matt? When the mantling happened?
Of course, the mantling. One of our favorite things that ever happened.
Arguably the best thing that's ever happened in DC Comics history, if you listen to this podcast. Did you think that would lead to a new Justice League book getting launched?
I didn't know how much metal would, how much of an effect it would have on DC Comics on the whole. Because, you know, it, as far as I know from what I've read, it was a placeholder event while DC was waiting for Doomsday Clock to come together. Speaking of which, I want to acknowledge that people have told us that Doomsday Clock is set 1 year in the future.
Yeah, which is the future nuts. Of the core DC universe.
That's nuts. I don't know how I forgot that from like the early issues of Doomsday Clock, but that's bananas that it's set 1 year in the future of this DC universe.
I would like an apology.
Okay, sorry, Chris. That I thought it was an alternate.
No, not from you, from Doomsday Clock.
Oh, I see. But the fact that it has had such an effect on all of those, like new, what is that line called? The new heroes, the one that has like the unexpected, which we're about to talk about, and the Terrifics and all those books in it. Like all of those come straight out of metal.
Yeah,
and like Justice League No Justice, which fed into this. Comes out of metal, and like this is about the source wall being broken and some like wild thing shooting toward Earth from the source wall. It's great.
Yeah, it's and it's bonkers, which I love because it's super cosmic, it's super huge, it's fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, like the one thing that I would gripe about is a very minor choice, and it's a lettering choice, and that is when the Justice League is speaking telepathically to each other. Mm-hmm. I am not very clear on like who is talking when, because it's just indicated by like ovals of color around the bubbles, and you can pick up from context clues what a lot of them are. Like obviously Flash is red, but like I don't know who purple's supposed to be. Is that Wonder Woman?
I mean, she doesn't wear purple.
No, none of them wear purple.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think none of them wear purple. Interesting.
So I like
Batman wears purple,
but it's not Batman. Batman is gray. Batman has gray circles around his. So, like, that is one minor gripe about like the presentation of the book. Like, maybe the how they telepathically communicate could be a little clearer, but That is my one gripe about this otherwise fantastic comic with baller Jim Cheung art.
Yeah,
who I've
super good.
I've talked about how much I like Jim Cheung on this show. He's one of my favorites. And this book looks so, so good. There's a Joker expression in here that's just like tip top.
Yeah, it's so good. The thing I like about this, it's about the Hall of Justice. It's about the formation of the Legion of Doom. But it doesn't slow down. Like, that stuff's happening. But also, there's like... Also, Matt, we didn't even talk about this. The moon gets blown up.
Oh, yeah, the moon gets blown up.
The Justice League blows up the moon.
You remember that Mr. Show sketch about blowing up the moon? They do it in this.
Yeah, they blow up the moon on, like, page 3. It's a real quick, let's blow up the moon. And do you know why? Because Vandal Savage has his Neanderthal tribes that he's been genetically engineering over millions of years to attack the Justice League. I love comic books, Matt. I love them.
And even when the Justice League gets around a table and starts doing, you know, strategy work, you know, there's a notable other Justice League number one where the Justice League sits around a table for the whole issue.
I don't know if I'd say notable, but yeah.
Okay.
There certainly is one.
Infamous, maybe. But, like, even when they get around a table and start strategizing, the book never becomes – it never slows down. It never becomes tedious. And, boy, I don't know that I would have thought to ever ask a comic to not be tedious, but I appreciate it so, so deeply in the year of our Lord 2018. Let's talk about Immortal Hulk number one.
Alrighty.
Which is such an interesting approach to a Hulk comic.
It is. Now, I saw Al Ewing talking about this one on Twitter, and he mentioned that it is not, it might not be what people who are really into his other Marvel work would expect. And that's a warning I appreciated going into it. Because for me, as a reader, Al Ewing is... U.S. Avengers is Contest of Champions. Like, U.S. Avengers number one has, you know, like, a flying volcano attacks. Like, a flying volcano attacks and Squirrel Girl has to beat it up, you know? Contest of Champions has Outlaw, the British Punisher, and Maestro in it. Like, that shit's great. Immortal Hulk number one is darker, for sure.
It's a horror comic.
Yeah, it's a horror story, and it's certainly not as – I mean, look, the Hulk is in it, so it's not like it's not a Marvel comic, and the premise is that, like, the Hulk can't die. Like, Bruce Banner can die, but the Hulk can't. So it's definitely got, like, a high concept to it, but it is not what you would expect coming from the Ultimates, coming from Contest of Champions – the other Al Ewing books. It is very, it's dark, but it's not dark in a way that I find unappealing.
Yeah, so it's Al Ewing writing. Joe Bennett does the art and does a great job with it and is actually sort of veering away from the style that I typically think of when I think of Joe Bennett, who did lots of Spider-Man comics in the late 90s. And also Alex Ross does the cover on this book. It's the best. The covers on this book where he's doing like a real Bernie Wrightson thing are some of the best Alex Ross work I think I've ever seen. I called it a horror comic. There's another thing that I was immediately struck by this reminding me of. Chris, do you want to take a guess as to what that might be? It's another comic book specifically.
No. What was it?
It feels like a Garth Ennis Punisher take on the Hulk.
That is, you know, I had not considered that at all. That is 100% accurate.
Because in this book, we talk about in the Garth Ennis Punisher, the Punisher is a force of nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
He is there. He shows up to kill people who deserve to be killed. The Hulk in this book is like, he doesn't exactly serve the same purpose as the Punisher. But he has the same mythic presence, we can get into Bruce Banner's head a little bit, but we are not going to get into the Hulk's head.
Yeah.
And it as a result, the Hulk is something that I would never describe the Hulk as being before this. Like, you might call the Hulk scary. You might call him intimidating. You would certainly call him destructive. I don't think I would call him menacing. But the Hulk of this comic is menacing.
Yes.
To everyone, including Bruce Banner himself. I love the approach. It's so fresh for a Hulk comic.
It reminded me of, do you remember when Bruce Jones took over Hulk?
Yeah, it made it a spy comic.
Yeah, and the opening of it very much reminded me of, that book. But in a very different way, and I think the difference is that exact, like, Garth Ennis attitude that works so well for it. I think you nailed it on that one, Matt.
The other thing I would note, and this is just weird, of all the various elements of this book, the word asshole appearing in an Incredible Hulk comic threw me for a loop.
I'm always surprised. And I will say this, as someone who has written a couple of Marvel comics, I'm always surprised at what we can't say, and then what people get away with in other comics. Not like in a way that I'm mad about it, but I'm like, huh, we couldn't call that guy something.
I was a little surprised that the word asshole appeared in the book. All right, one last comic that we're going to talk about is The Unexpected number one. And Chris, I know you flipped through this at least. This is the newest in the DC New Heroes line, the New Age of Heroes line, by Ryan Sook, Kerry Nord, and Steve Orlando.
Those are three very good comic book creators.
Three very good comic book creators. I believe that Ryan Sook is mostly doing the covers, and there are pinups inside that he draws. I believe Kerry Nord is doing most of the interior pages, though. I may be wrong about that, but that feels right. And then Steve Orlando's doing the scripting at the very least. I don't know. The way that the credits are done in these New Age of Heroes books is a little different, where it's just like everybody's name gets put into a storyteller's credit. So it's a little hard to say. But Chris, you identified it pretty clearly and pretty quickly as what it obviously is, which is a Defenders riff. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you've got a Doctor Strange analog. You've got a pretty clear Hulk analog.
Yeah, magic guy, big guy.
Yeah, there's not really a Silver Surfer analog to speak of. There are some kind of Thor-like characters in there. And then the lead character is a fascinating character. Her name is Firebrand. She died as a paramedic during an emergency. Her father sold her remains to a futurist arms developer. Mm-hmm. Which put a new heart in her body called the Conflict Engine.
Uh-huh.
That only she can only live by fighting someone every 24 hours.
Matt? I think I need to read this comic right now.
Yeah, it's fucking great. And essentially she is immediately targeted by intergalactic forces, one of whom looks like a sort of like cowboyed up macho man.
Mm-hmm. I said, oh, is Lemmy in this?
Yeah. He's got that look about him, but I kind of got a macho man vibe from him a little bit. People show up immediately trying to steal her conflict engine heart, which is incredibly powerful.
So it's Krank.
It's kind of Krank.
So if the Defenders was Krank.
But also, like, you know, it's like Iron Man's heart, kind of. Like, there are a lot of moving parts in this.
God, the conflict engine. Steve Orlando, I don't know for sure that Steve Orlando came up with that. Whoever came up with that is brilliant.
But I'll say this. Like, you get the sense pretty early that it's going to be a Defenders riff. And then it does some shit where you're like, oh, maybe that's not what it is. like, maybe this is something totally different from that, and I got fooled into thinking this was a Defenders riff. Because the book takes a turn.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a little, like, right around halfway through, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of this issue, I do not know where it's going. I just know that I am hooked by these, like, wild ideas that are in it.
Oh, I love a wild idea, Matt. You know I do.
Yeah. So, you know, between this and the Terrifics, it's hard to say that, you know, these New Age of Heroes, this New Age of Heroes line is not a success. Even though, you know, I'm not jumping out of my seat to read more Damage, I like several of these New Age of Heroes books quite a bit.
They've all been interesting, at least.
Yeah.
Like, I think we can safely say of the ones we've read, like, Damage was the one that didn't really hook me. Silencer took place in South Carolina and had Talia in it and Leviathan.
And the Terrifics is great.
And the Terrifics is great. So, a lot of good stuff in the old comic books.
Well, speaking of good stuff in comic books, Chris, let's now talk to our good pal, Dylan Todd.
I would love that, Matt. Joining us for the program this week, we are pleased to invite a very good friend of ours, someone who is an expert on a subject that is near and dear to us. He is a letterer, a designer. He is the Star Wars prequel liker. The prequel liker has logged on, everyone. Dylan Todd is here. Dylan, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Now, Dylan, you're a designer.
I am.
And you have done a not insignificant amount of comic book design.
I have done my fair share.
Could you tell our listeners some of the design projects you've worked on?
So the people recording this podcast, I've done the logo for Radical Guardian Skater X for Chris with Joe Hunter.
A good one. Very good one.
I did the logo for Matt Wilson and K-Dev.
Kevin Warren.
Sorry, I play video games with Kevin all the time. So we just call him K-Dev. But they're Copernicus Jones, Robot Detective. Most recently, I've done a couple logos for DC. I did the Gabe Carson Has an Interstellar High logo and the Hawkman logo. Right now, I'm currently designing stuff for Kaiju Max at Oni Press, Sam Humphreys and Jim Bartel's Blackbird, coming soon from Image Comics. Kyle Stark's Rock Candy Mountain, I did the design for that. That's the most recent. Heartthrob with Chris Sabella and Robert Wilson, the fourth.
Did you do Dr. Fate?
I did do the most recent Dr. Fate logo. I did that, yeah.
How do you do it, Dylan? What goes into making, before we start going through the good and bad logos that we have seen in our lifetimes of reading comic books, are there specific rules to making a good logo?
A large part of it is actually being legible, as well as communicating the core idea of the book. That's not a very exciting answer, but it's got to look good, and it's got to be able to read it.
Well, I know when you were doing Skater X, like, obviously that was a book that was heavily inspired by, like, tokusatsu stuff. Like, specifically, you know, Kamen Rider Forze was the big touchstone. So I sent you a bunch of Kamen Rider stuff, and you were already looking at Kamen Rider stuff for that. What do you try and pick up on? Is it just, like, do you look at similar things and look at the shape of the logo, like how it sits on the cover?
Definitely. I mean, that's definitely part of it. You've got a certain area of real estate at the top that you want to be read, depending on, I mean, it's a lot of that is holdovers from when comics used to be on spinner racks. You'd have like the top third for a logo, but a lot of it is just balance. A lot of it is making it fun and exciting and interesting to look at.
How big is too big for a logo? Cause you talk about like that top third that we're all kind of comfortable with, like that's where the X-Men logo goes. But, like, if you look at something like the trade dress for Civil War, where it's literally half the cover.
It would be fine if if that made sense thematically. Like, I'm thinking of Tom Mueller's Mueller, his work for The Weatherman that's coming out from Image Comics. Like, it's a pretty big logo. And, or Days of Hate, you did Days of Hate, Al Scott's Days of Hate, and it's a very big logo. But it works with the aesthetics of the book, and it works with, you know, it works. It's a very nice, big, bold application, so. It really depends. So the Civil War logo sucks, but. is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, try to burn all those bridges for you, Dylan.
I feel like a big part of what makes a logo successful is just like this weird gut feeling of like, this is representative of the book or the character to me, or it's not.
Yeah. I mean, it is, it's an art, it's subjective, but at the same time, you know, it's something I've trained to do, you know, gone to school for it. It's my day job. I do design all day long.
I guess I wonder, like, I mean, a lot of times, because we've been through this process where, like, you'll ask a few basic questions and then you'll create a few different designs or like, some starting points that then, like, the person, the editor or the writer can choose from, and then you can go from there. But, like, as a designer, what do you feel like you need to know to get that?
A lot of it is like, okay, what's your intended group, right? So you're going to talk differently if it's a all ages book as opposed to a mature reader's book, right? Those are two separate things. What is like the core concept of the book? And then you figure out ways that you can speak to that core concept. And then like, I usually ask, is there anything you don't want me to do? Because comics people are creative people and they have ideas, and I want to make sure that that gets in there, because at the end of the day I'm an intermediary between the creator and their vision, and my job is, like I've said before, like my job is to gift wrap the idea. Like, the present is already there, the writer and the artist and the letterer and the colorist and editor have all made that present. My job is to just put a bow on it.
Is it easier or is it harder to do a logo for something like Hawkman, which has had maybe not dozens, but a lot of logos over the years, and you kind of know Hawkman's deal, but I feel like if they're asking for a new logo, you probably feel like you need to do something different from what's been done before.
Yeah. So for Hawkman, I got the job from Kenny Lopez, the art director of DC. And he said, we're doing a new Hawkman book. Here's the pitch. You know, here's the creative team. If you want to include the Hawkman little icon, the little Thundercats looking icon, go for that. You don't have to, but here's that file if you need to. So then I went and looked at all of the Hawkman logos, right? And I was like, okay, so now, and I know Hawkman's deal. He's a man with wings who hits people with a mace, right?
I was going to say, if you guys have both said that you know what Hawkman's deal is, if you could explain it to me later off mic, well, I would appreciate
you
it.
You forget that Matt and I also recapped DC's Legends of Tomorrow series, which the worst Hawkman.
We followed the saga of that terrible Hawkman and poor Hawk Girl who needed to get away from him.
But yeah, so I looked at the history of logos. I also looked at a lot of like heavy metal logos, because Hawkman is probably one of the more metal superheroes out there. And as, since this is sort of spitting out of metal, I figured that was somewhat thematically appropriate.
Are there any trends in logo design that you're either like, yes, this is like an aesthetic that I'm really excited about, or, and also, what are the ones that you're like, no more like plain Futura on covers anymore, please?
Okay, that's one. Here's the thing. I really love Futura. It's a nice, clean font, but it is the number one font that artists will go to because it is a system font on their computer. And it's nice looking. So when you're trying to publish your own comics, you don't need to hire somebody because You can lay it out. You can type out the words. In future, it looks nice. And that's fine. I don't like it, though. I'm really kind of over the skewed All-Star Superman look that everybody was trying to do for a while there.
Yeah, I will say this. I'm not a fan of that logo.
It's a bad logo.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's fine, but it's not. I don't care for it. That's a Chip Kidd design.
Yeah, here's the thing. I think Chip Kidd's book covers are some of the best design that we're ever going to see as human beings. I think his comics work sucks. I think it sucks.
Oh, watch the throne.
Yeah, I think I do like his Dark Knight Returns and Dark Knight Strikes Again hardcovers that he did, which are in the same vein as his book covers. But otherwise, his Final Crisis trade design sucks. All-Star Superman sucks. what else could I say sucks?
Well, Dylan, it seems like you're a big fan of, speaking of trends, it seems like you're a big fan of, very clean-looking logos.
Yeah, definitely. At the same time, I mean, if you have something that is not clean that also fits the just the tone of the book, then that's great, too. But
So you're not averse to a distressed logo?
No. I've done quite a few. Like, I did the Rock Candy Mountain logo, which is...
Yeah, that's true.
Type being distressed, and you know, but that's thematically appropriate. It's about hobos having the literal devil on a train.
We're kind of already starting to get into specifics, so let's talk about that. Do you have, if I say, what's the all-time best logo in comics history? Do you have an answer for that?
X-Force.
I mean, you're not wrong.
It's the best one. I used to, that's what got me interested in doing comics design, is I would sit at my drawing table and try to replicate that logo with a T-square and a triangle and try to, get the line width right and get the perspective right and everything else.
Here's what I love about the X-Force logo.
Now, we are talking about, to be clear, we're talking about the original Rob logo that is a little bit skewed, but not the one with the big X on top and the force underneath.
No. We're talking the nice perspectival one. That's my baby.
Yeah. The one that looks like it's kind of a take on the Steranko X-Men logo.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the two great things about that logo. Number one, it is a take on the Steranko X-Men logo, which is also one of the all-time best. But the Steranko X-Men logo is going away from you.
Yeah.
The X-Force logo is coming at you.
Yeah, it's going to get you. It's going to smack you across the face with a pouch full of bullets.
Here's the other thing. It's a sword.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you guys have seen that. Every time I look at that X-Force logo, I'm like, right, it's a sword. Because it looks like a sword.
I know, but is it a one-bladed sword or a two-bladed sword?
It's got all the blades. Just all the blades. I love the X-Force logo. I feel like it's got sharp points. It's got hard edges. It's got everything you need to know before you go in that book.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, it is definitely like a logo that a 13-year-old would, scribble in the middle of class just to get the... It's like the Stussy... That little Stussy S, but as a logo.
I think it's a little more design than that, but you're the expert, Dylan.
A little, you know what I mean, though. It's like this very, I don't know, there's something primally 13 about it, which works well with that comic.
All right, any others that spring to mind as being some of the good ones?
I'm a big fan of Ryan Hughes' work, even though he himself is sort of a bigot. His Batman and Robin logo is really nice. What else? He's done a lot. He's the guy that I go for.
Yeah, that you brought up that Batman and Robin logo. That's a good logo, yeah, for sure. Before you you arrived, Dylan, Matt and I were talking about how there's been, like, very few good Batman logos. Like, the current logo on the Batman comics is a garbage heap.
Yeah, yeah, it's bad.
Like, the logo that's on Batman right now, trash. Awful.
And I think we came to the conclusion that it's like a take on the video game logos, the Batman Arkham video game logos.
Yes, definitely.
But it's those games are over, and they should change that logo like as soon as possible. I have no idea why they have not done so.
Because way more people have played those Batman games than read comics.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
But nobody likes those logos. They like that there's Batman in it.
I know. Don't talk to me.
So I was.
You don't have to tell me. I understand. But yeah, it's not a great logo. But there's got to be. I keep feeling like having worked in a corporate advertising structure, like there's got to be somebody above the person above who says, that's the Batman logo we're doing because we tested it, and this is the one.
We were talking about this. The only one that springs to mind that is like edging toward good, like it could be a permanent Batman logo, was the one that they were using during Hush.
Okay, I remember that one.
Where it has the kind of like, it has the Batman outline. In the background, and it's kind of just like a italicized font. It's very simple, but it's like,
oh yeah, yeah, I'll yeah. Send it to no, you. No, yeah, it's like a it's similar to the. I mean, it's like a riff on the old timey Detective Comics.
Yeah, it's an evolution of the original Batman logo, where it was like the Batman silhouette, and then Batman was two words.
No, it's.
Space
it's a fun one, and I think that might be Ryan Hughes. No, I can't say for sure, but I think, or maybe I'm thinking of his Batgirl logo that had a similar swoopy cape.
Yeah, I remember that Batgirl logo for sure.
What is it about Batman that all of the good logos have a picture of Batman behind it? Like, you might not know who it is. Is it just that Batman himself has such a good silhouette?
Batman is a, like, that's a fun character to look at, you know?
Yeah, I know.
I don't know if you guys have heard about Batman. But.
All right, well, let's flip the script a little bit before Matt and I get into some of our best and worst picks, and you can see how we stack up, Dylan. Worst. Who's got the bad logo? And it doesn't have to be current. It can be an older one.
Yeah, that's what I'm gonna have to, because the ones that come to mind are all current, and I don't want to burn any bridges or hurt anybody's feelings. But oh man, yeah, I can't say that. Every logo is good.
Except the only bad logo in comics is the current Batman logo. Yeah. That's what we've heard.
That one's also good. The Walking Dead logo kind of sucks, let's be honest.
Okay. I was talking about the Walking Dead logo.
We were talking about that before you jumped on.
Okay.
I feel like, and Matt pointed out that it's like a very conscious, very consciously evocative of like the Saul Bass stuff.
A little, yeah.
But I feel like if you take that logo off the cover and ignore the content of the words and just look at the shape of the letters and the shape of the logo, it looks like it should be on a Happy Meal.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, that logo looks like it was two guys who were self-publishing comics and then managed to get a book picked up by Image that suddenly ran away from them. Like, I don't think that you look at the Robert Kirkman books that are on the stands now, like, that dude has money to hire people.
Yeah, it looks homemade.
It looks very homemade.
Which is almost appropriate for a black and white zombie comic that just happened to be the biggest success ever, but yeah, you'd think Kirkman could like pay up to change it. and improve
it. I mean, you can't know. That Outcast logo is really good. That Oblivion song logo is really good. Like, just all the stuff that Skybound puts out is very well designed. Dead Body Road logo, like, that's a nice big logo. But yeah, the original Walking Dead logo. Y'all should have hired somebody. That's all I'm saying. You could have sold even more.
Yeah, it was really holding it back.
Yeah.
Okay, so one thing that I think is worth talking about before we get into, like, some of mine and Chris's personal favorites is, like, I'm looking at right now, I'll send you the link to this, but I'm looking right now at a page of essentially current Marvel logos. These are all logos that Marvel is using as in Fresh Start.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, let's get me in trouble with Marvel some more.
No, I'm not asking you to talk trash. I'm asking you to, like, with the exception of a few exceptions, like, of a few small differences, like, the Thor logo is obviously new. The Ant-Man and Wasp logo looks like the movie logo.
Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of thing. These all are very evocative of, like, classic Marvel logos. Like, this is a new Fantastic Four logo, but it certainly evokes the original Fantastic Four.
It also looks a lot like the Heroes Reborn Fantastic Four logo.
It does!
Which I have to think is a conscious decision. But yeah, a lot of these are it's funny because they're really, like, Hollywood did them a service because they managed to, but then you have, so, like, the Venom logo that is, like, that's a Venom logo. Hollywood's like, yeah, this is it. Yeah,
that's the one they use. I was shocked to see that logo in the Venom trailer.
It's bananas.
Like, bowled over.
Why wouldn't you, though? Like, it looks, that looks like Venom.
It looks like Venom.
It looks like some 14-year-old kid's idea of, like, what if Spider-Man was cool? What if Spider-Man wasn't such a wuss?
I wonder if you feel like there is some kind of sense that, like, because I often feel like there's definitely a move toward messing with the classics. But do you think that there is a feeling now of, like, just use the classic logos?
Honestly, well, here's the thing. Like, that's
a lot better.
Yeah, well, I think it's also a pretty naked attempt by Marvel to regain their lost fan base. But I don't think it was the logos that were chasing people away. I think that they had substandard product on the stands, and that's why people aren't reading Marvel comics. It's not that... Anyway. But yeah, there's definitely... These look a lot like, oh, hey... Remember Marvel Comics, guys?
Remember Heroes Reborn?
Yeah. Do you remember when people bought comics?
All right. So I actually like that new Fantastic Four logo quite a bit. I was just looking at it and thinking it was good.
It's I had not had the thought about it looking like Heroes Reborn until you pointed it out.
That's the
and
first
now
thing.
I can't not think that.
I am curious, like, to see it, like, on a cover, because it looks like there's, like, too many gradients on that thing right now, but we'll have to see it in actual practical application before I can really dog on it.
All right, so Matt, do you want to start with some of your favorites and least favorites?
Well, I want to start with one that Chris and I disagree about.
Okay.
And I don't know that I necessarily would say it's a favorite, but it's certainly iconic. To the point where, like, it's hard for me to imagine a different and better logo. And that is the classic, and it's on this Marvel Fresh Start page, the classic brick Hulk logo. Like, is that a good one?
Here's the thing. I have no idea if that's good or bad, because that is the Hulk logo. I remember when I grew up, there was, like, a hauling company, like a concrete company, that had stolen that logo. They were called, like, the Incredible Bulk, and it was, like, Bulk Hauling. And so, like, yeah, so it's,
that's
like...
That's hilarious.
I don't know, that logo has always been there.
Yeah, it's... I would say, similarly, yeah. It's hard for me to judge because that is just the Hulk logo to me. But I don't know. If I try to think about it in any kind of like, I don't know, if I try to remove myself from my nostalgia, I feel like it looks good. But Chris doesn't like it so much.
Here's the problem with
Hulk's not made of bricks. The Hulk's not made of bricks.
No, but he's strong like bricks.
Bricks aren't strong. Like,
yeah, but back,
he smashes bricks.
Back in World War II, that was the strongest thing they had. They used to make warships out of them.
The Hulk is not made of bricks.
How do you know? That's for sure. Do you know for sure?
End of it.
Are you Stanley?
Yeah. I've got the official handbook.
I don't know, man. Who knows? They could retcon that any day and be like, oh no, he's Brick Banner. He's made of bricks.
Okay, well, if they do that, I will then rescind my problem with that logo.
What if they cut him open and it was just a brick wall behind there? That's my pitch.
I hope Al Ewing is listening, and that's where Immortal Hulk is building.
Al Ewing.
The incredible brick.
Immortal Hulk was, number one, was very good. I'm a very big fan of your writing. But here's the thing with Hulk, is it's four letters. That is a really hard word to make look good, because it's got to be longer than it is higher. But the problem is that that's impossible to do without the letters looking funky.
Yeah, it's also that logo has a perspective to it. But because it's an even number of letters and it's a small number of letters, there's a gap right in the middle that you can see right down.
Yeah, no, that's not good.
Yeah. I don't care.
No, it's like I said, it's hard to think of what else it would be. I don't know if it's good or bad, it just is. What else? What else we got?
A recent one that I actually like quite a bit is the Dynamite James Bond logo.
Oh yeah, that's pretty nice.
It's very like, you know, designy, but a lot of James Bond logos try to do the thing where they link up the O in Bond to the 007.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever seen it done as well as it is on the covers of these comic books.
No, it's very nice. For some reason, I'm thinking the Quantum of Solace did it pretty good too.
Yes, it's very along the same lines of the Casino Royale poster and Quantum of Solace poster for sure. Yeah. Less so, Skyfall Inspector.
Yeah, we didn't talk about those ones.
But Casino Royale did the same thing, where the O's in Casino and Royale lined up to make the 007. But I think. That's a really good recent one because it looks right, you know.
Yeah, it's a way more not condensed but like compressed. Like the letters are nice and thin. It's like a nice sexy, because the Quantum Solace and the Casino Royale ones both do like a more, can't think of, like a more serif-y type of O, and this just keeps everything nice and. One weight and yeah, it's a nice one. Good job. I also like the fact that you can easily get a subhead on there, and the way that they've treated the covers, where it's a big, there's a big block across the top. You have the logo, and then you've got Hammerhead or Varger or the other ones. Anyway, those are good points too.
Matt, do you have a least favorite that you want to talk about?
I guess, Dylan, I'm looking for your expert opinion on whether you believe, because we talked about Batman logos.
Yeah.
Another character who has been around nearly as long, and it feels like there has been a long process of like just not being satisfied with his logos, is Captain America.
Yeah. That was going to be mine that I brought up.
Honestly, the only time Captain America logos have looked good have been like Ryan Hughes had those around when Captain America was dying and coming back and all that stuff.
Which was the original like Captain America comics 1940s Captain America logo, just cleaned up.
I think I'm thinking of a different one, but I'm trying to think of.
Well, I'll show you what might be the worst one.
Yeah, do it.
I'm interested to see what you think of this one, because it's from one of the worst periods of Captain America comics.
Ooh, I bet I know which one it is.
It's from the John Nee Raber.
Yeah, boy, that cursive logo.
That's bad.
it's like they were trying to do Captain America in a U.S. Constitution font.
Yeah, founding father Captain America. No, that's bad.
My favorite Captain America logo is the one more recently. It was the kind of Sam Wilson era logo. It's the one with the shield flying behind it that was on the first Mark Waid run.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's okay. There's some weird things like with the descender on the P and the dot on the I that make like a weird square in the middle, but.
I always thought that logo looked like it should be for like a space hero, though, not Captain America.
It's got those like it looks lines. Like it's.
Yeah, I mean, well, not the one with the shield, but the one that was just that font. Like it looks like it should be like an Adam Strange.
It's like a Serpentine knockoff. The font. It's a little goofy. I always end up thinking about that red, white, and blue one just because, again, like it's the Hulk. The Hulk syndrome, where that was the one when I was very first becoming aware of superheroes, and like,
oh, yeah. Are you talking about the one that like very lightly arcs upward?
Yeah, it's like the little bendy. I want to say it's like probably like a bicentennial type deal.
I have the cover for the. I have a large, like probably like 3x2 canvas print of the first Kirby Captain America like 75 issue. The first part of Mad Bomb. It can destroy the world. It's hanging above my coffee maker, so I see it every morning. And I don't think about this every morning, but as I'm filling up the coffee maker, I'm like, that's not what the American flag is. Because that logo is a red stripe, a white stripe, and a blue stripe. That's not what the American flag is. That's the flag of somewhere else.
Yes, but... You do know that canonically Steve Rogers is a very big fan of bomb pops. Just where that logo came from. No, I don't. But it looks like a bomb pop. It makes me want to eat a bomb pop.
I mean, look, I would accept that. I would accept that as being like...
Is that the French flag? No, the French flag is like red.
The French flag is vertical stripes. That flag, the one that's red, red stripe, white stripe, blue stripe, is the flag of the Kingdom of Croatia from the 19th century.
Atta boy, yeah. Let's do it, Captain Croatia. That's not bad at all.
Look, I mean, that's fine. Like, I'm not opposed to Captain Croatia's existence. I'm just saying that's not what the American flag is.
No, it isn't. It's a drunk French flag or a Croatian flag.
Matt, do we have any others that we want to specifically? I know you are a big fan of the classic Spider-Man logo.
Yeah, I like the classic, like arcing downward, Amazing Spider-Man logo. I can take or leave the cursive lowercase D, but as far as like that being Spider-Man's logo
for me,
you think
I,
so?
I genuinely love that touch.
It's really fun. I think Web of Spider-Man was the best one.
Yeah.
Personally.
I deeply, deeply hate the 90s Spider-Man logo that's, like, creepy looking.
The creepy logo?
Because Spider-Man's not supposed to be creepy.
Oh, but what if he was?
Well, it's a very weird to my choice. TED Talk.
That's how Venom got started. Somebody said, but what if Spider-Man was a creep?
Ooh. Well, then that's Venom's logo. It should be Spider-Man's logo.
You gotta get creepy to fight a creep. That's in the Bible.
That is biblical. You're right.
What do you think of that classic Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man logo?
Let me look that up.
I'm looking on logocomics.wikia.com. which is where I've been pulling a lot of, or using for a lot of reference, if anybody listening wants to go look at that.
Yeah, it's great, by the way. They have all the Super Sentai logos on there.
But if I go to Logos W, it doesn't have the original, it doesn't have, like, the Wolverine logo.
Oh.
It has Wolverines, but I don't see the logo for Wolverine, and I was going to ask about, like, should anybody ever even bother to change that one? The answer is no.
No, why would you?
I can't find the Wolverine logo.
But you know what it looks like.
The Spectacular Spider-Man logo is pretty good. It's all right. It's not as good as the Spider-Ham logo. Let's be honest.
Dylan, do you think there is a better Thor logo than the Simonson Workman era Thor logo?
Probably not.
That's it.
I almost like the new one. It's so close.
The one with the big square O.
Touching the other two letters, like just slightly, and it drives me insane.
I do not dislike the previous logo that had Mjolnir the O. But something about the current logo, the 2018 Thor logo, it looks like that Batman, the current Batman logo to me, and I'm not 100%.
Yeah, it's that O in the middle is really, really throws me for a loop. It's just too. It's almost like the H and the R have these little points underneath that almost work, but I don't know. It's like they're poking. Stop poking. Stop making them poke. Please. If they had just taken those sides of that O and squared it a little bit, the same amount of space that's between the T and the H. Give that a try. See how that looks. I don't know.
All right. Well, Dylan, I think we are going to see what our listeners have to ask you in your capacity as a logo expert. Matt, if people want to get in on these chats that we have about the very, very tight minutia of comics every week, how exactly can they go about that?
They can design me some logos for comics that I may or may not be doing in the future for free. It's a contest. It's an online design contest.
Oh, I am bound by law to say that you are not supposed to do that.
And once they do that, they can go sign up for an account on twitter.com. Follow the Matt D. Wilson, that's me, and the ISB, that's Chris. Wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 6:30 Pacific. And one of us will put out the call for questions, just like these questions you're about to hear for Dylan Todd. Our first question comes from Mike_Donacci, or okay. Donacci, on Twitter, who asks, what's the most brainless thing anyone has said to you when talking about design? I'm assuming this is one of those bad client kind of questions.
Okay, so I mentioned earlier, I've worked in design for over a decade now. I can tell you the funniest thing I've heard somebody say about design, and that is my old college professor, his dad did not understand what he did for a living as a graphic designer. And so he was home during college, and the California Raisins commercial came on the TV, and he said, "Is that what you do?" And he said, "I told my dad no," and his dad just sort of threw up his hands like, "I'm never going to understand what it is you do." I don't think my dad really understands what I do, but I know that I understand what it is.
If it's not the California Raisins, I don't know what it is.
I thought I had it figured out. Do you animate raisins? No? Oh, okay. Back to the drawing board, I guess. Yeah, I can't think of anything specific, but people got a lot of kooky ideas about designing.
Well, here's one from our pal, Sequential Matt, on Twitter. He wants to know, what got young Dylan into design? And you've kind of touched on that a little bit with the X-Force logo.
Yeah. Before that, the two things that really stuck out to me and really got me thinking about what is this thing and how do I do that for a living? Because initially I wanted to be a comic artist just like any other, you know, nerdy kid. I can draw, but I don't draw very well. But there were ads that ran for the Dick Tracy movie and like every comic ever and the Warren Beatty Dick Tracy movie. And it was like the most captivating, stylistic, iconic thing you can imagine. And that's another one where I would sit with markers and a pencil and I would try and make those, recreate those shapes and be like, how do they make this look so good? And the Rocketeer campaign, and then stuff like tracing the X-Force logos. I'm like, someone's got to do that for a living. What if I did something like that? So there you go. It's all comic books fun.
Here's one from Doubting_Tom on Twitter. What's the best character logo to see in a word balloon?
None. Don't do that.
Don't do that? Never do it.
I think it just sucks you out of the comic.
What are you talking about? That's my favorite thing.
Oh, man, I don't like it.
Oh, what was the best.
I can't even remember the book I read this week.
It was where, it was Man of Steel.
Was it?
Because it was Green
Lantern. Is that
Green
the one? Yes. Yeah. That was the one where the Green Lantern logo appeared when Green Lantern showed up. And it wasn't great. I don't mind seeing...
DC does it a lot, yeah. And I do not love it. Sorry.
I don't mind a Superman logo showing up, maybe.
Yeah. No. Like, I wouldn't go so far as to go, like, Warren Ellis route and, like, have... Cause that's when you started seeing, like, upper lowercase and comics lettering, which, don't do that. It's bad. But, yeah, that just sucks me right out. And it's, like, it's silly. It makes you think, dun-dun-dun-dun. I don't know.
Dylan, you knew you weren't getting out of this without some Star Wars questions.
Yeah, let's do it.
This one's from Julia Whiteford. Rank the bounty hunters.
Okay, so rank the friends. So let's see. I'm just going to do the ones that show up in Empire Strikes Back because there's like all the ones that show up in Clone Wars too, but and the prequels. But we'll say number one is Dengar, right? Because he looks like a mummy from outer space. And his name is Next Up Danger. And that's exactly what you get when you mess with him. I would say IG-88. And one of the biggest problems with the original trilogy is that we never got stop motion IG-88. Like, imagine if he had like sort of started walking away at the end of that scene, like a weird go motion IG-88. That would have been great.
Now, is it true that that stands for Instagram 88?
It stands for Ignatius Garcia 1988. It's when he graduated from high school. No, I don't know. then like Zuckus, or no, Forlom, and then Zuckus, and then who else? And then way down to the bottom is Boba Fett, who sucks, and is for babies.
Here's one from Tales to Enrage. Have you recovered from the constant Dengar dunks?
I'm not mad. You know, I'm not mad. I'm laughing. It's funny.
Do people not respect your love of Dengar?
No, they don't.
Dylan?
No, they don't. Specifically, I'm not going to name names, but they know who they are. They know what they did. And one of them I room with at Emerald City every year, so let's see what happens when you fall asleep. Maybe you'll wake up covered in Dengar rags.
All right, now it's time for Character Corner, the part of listener questions where fictional characters ask questions of our guests. Here's one from Stone Cold HCC, an account that exists only to ask questions on War Rocket Ajax. Stone Cold wants to know, what's the longest hot dog you ever ate?
I had almost a foot-long hot dog at the Slots of Fun Casino here in Las Vegas. The night before I went to a Grateful Dead concert, which is the single worst concert experience of my life.
Here's one from JJJ Bugle News, J. Jonah Jameson. He's got a problem he would like you to help solve, Dylan. The Bugle is losing market share with the youths, and the boys in marketing are telling me that a hip new logo is exactly what we need to get those damn millennials to read. What would you suggest for a fresh Daily Bugle logo? I can't pay much, but it would be great exposure.
I would decline this offer because I don't I don't particularly care for the Bugle's anti-Spider-Man stance. He's a hero, he's not a menace. And there you go.
Daily Bugle, for years, just having, like, fucking Times New Roman as the mask.
Yeah,
weird choice.
And you can tell Matt's a you're no profesh, because he just calls it the mask.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's one of the other bad things in comics is fake newspapers are always really not good.
yeah. If I may, not to step on our guest's toes here, Matt, can I offer two suggestions to J. Jonah Jameson?
Well, Dylan is declining the offer, and it's for exposure only.
Okay, so hold on. Real quick, here's my suggestion. Get bent, Jameson.
My suggestion, one, more of a comment than a suggestion, just, hey, remember when it was the DB? Is it still the DB?
Was that a thing?
Yeah, man, that's when they wanted to really appeal to the millennials. They changed it to the DB.
Oh, that's bad.
I mean, in story, they wanted to appeal to millennials. That's why they did it. It was the DB.com.
I do like the DBs, but no, I'm good.
Second suggestion, instead of just saying the Daily Bugle, put the into a little tiny cursive on there, because that's good.
Change your name to the Daily Bugle. How about that? Boom. Really,
I will say the design of the Daily Bugle from the movies, the Sam Raimi movies, does look like it could be a New York tabloid. Like, they did an okay job on those. And I think that's going to do it for our Twitter questions. We've got a few more, but we're essentially out of time. So, Dylan, thanks for joining us for this test pilot, this backdoor pilot for our logo podcast, Logoria.
Oh, no. yeah, there's cream for that.
But before we let you go, please tell all our listeners where they can find you online.
You can find me on at Big Red Robot on Twitter. My portfolio is up at, and that's where you can get all of my great SJW Soy Boy hot takes. And my portfolio website is bigredrobot.net. That's it.
Our guest has been designer Dylan Todd. He's great, and everything that he works on is great. So, Dylan, we'll see you soon, buddy. Thank you for being on the show.
No problem. Thanks.
Too bad you're wrong about characters putting logos in more bullets.
We'll see.
Which is the magic of comic books.
Time will prove me right.
Thanks once again to Dylan Todd for joining us for this week's show. But now, Matt, it's time for us to lend our expertise to a topic. Because it's time for us to do another installment of Panel President.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
From the President's office in the White House.
President. That's right, Chris. It's time for Panel President, the segment where we rank characters from comic books. And Jordan Bloom, a line stepper, has three lists for us to choose from.
All right, hit me.
Classic-ish ex-villains.
Okay.
DC legacy characters. Or okay. Beloved and hated X-Men.
You know it's got to be DC legacy characters, boy.
You did not take the X-Men bait. We're going DC legacy characters. Okay.
Because if there's one thing that I love more than anything else in this world, it's DC legacy characters.
All right, here we go. We're starting with Jade Jennifer Lynn Hayden.
Talking about Infinity Inks, Jennifer Lynn Hayden?
The very same.
Kind of the Roy Thomas creation?
Created in All-Star Squadron number 25 in September 1983.
You're talking about a character who's kind of a Green Lantern, but also kind of controls plants?
Yes, that's her. That's her.
Jade's not bad. Jade's also not good.
Yeah, she's in that middle space.
She's definitely in that middle space. Like, I think there's a lot of potential in her character, but she's kind of confusing in the way that a lot of the, like, Infinity Inc. characters, once they got folded back into the regular DC universe after Crisis, like, that we had to be like, oh yeah, none of the Justice Society had kids until they were in their 60s. And then Jade had the weird thing of being, like, a Green Lantern character, who wasn't actually a Green Lantern. Like, she had kind of Green Lantern-ish powers, but not.
And she has kind of a Green Lantern-ish costume.
Yeah, and she's green.
Her skin is green, yes.
Her skin is green. She's got them Starheart powers.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Starheart stuff. That's I do not know.
It's trying to do a different thing in Green Lantern than making everybody Green Lantern, which I do respect. But none of it is quite there.
Yeah, it's not quite there. I don't dislike her. Like, I'm not going to, you know, throw away a comic because Jade shows up, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I don't know, she's like, she's very comparable in my head to Power Girl, where Power Girl is like weirdly confusing for so much of her existence.
Yeah, I get a lot of that.
I think you can boil Power Girl down in a way that Jade is a little harder to do.
I think Power Girl is a more interesting character.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see Jade and go, I gotta know more about her. Whereas, at least with Power Girl, like, her backstory is so weird and complex, you're like, what is her deal? You know? Yeah. Like, with Jade, not so much.
Well, Power Girl, it can be as complicated as you want it to be, right? Like, it can be, like, you can get into publication history, or you can just be like, oh yeah, she's Supergirl from another dimension where she's older.
Yeah.
The end.
That's true. That is definitely true.
So we have Power Girl at 180 on this list.
So I am thinking about Linda Danvers Supergirl.
Ooh.
Who is another, like, trying to do a new thing attempt.
Are you talking about the Supergirl who was simultaneously a clone from another dimension and an angel?
That's right. That's the one. Yeah. Matrix.
Yeah, you talking about Matrix? Talk about the Supergirl who had a comet, the Super Horse, who was also an angel.
That's, yes, that is the one.
People like those comics. Yeah, I don't think she's that good either.
Okay, so a little bit below that, like if you go down to like 200, you've got like Boom Boom and Spoiler.
I don't think she's as good as either of those. I would be looking at, like, my eyes went to 266, which is Victoria Hand.
Who is good. She's, and can add something to a story.
But it's also just, like, fine. You know, like, she's a plot point more than a character.
I think Jade probably goes above her. I don't know that she goes above D-Man.
She definitely doesn't go above Multiple Man. I think I would be more interested in reading about D-Man than I would be about Jade.
Let's put her between D-Man and Black Mask.
All right. Entering the list at 265, Jade. That's Jenny Lynn Hayden.
Next here on Jordan's list is Obsidian, Todd Rice.
Come on, Jade's brother.
That's the dude.
Hey, can I be completely real with you, Matt?
Please do.
Obsidian sucks, dude. Here's what extra sucks about him is that he's, like, weirdly one of the most prominent gay characters in DC Comics. Like, or was for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, it was him and Pied Piper forever, you know? But, like, he's also very bad and doesn't make sense. And, like, is one of those characters like Brother Blood who, like, is supposed to be a big, big deal every time he shows up. And maybe he was if you were, like, really into Infinity Inc. But, like, he never clicks. He's worse than Jade.
But he was also, in addition to being in Infinity Inc., he's been in the JSA, too.
Yeah. And what did he do in that book? I know he was in it. What did he do?
I mean, not a lot. Not a lot.
Can't remember, can you?
He's one of those characters who has too many powers.
Yeah. Because he's another one of the, like, he's also Green Lantern's kid. He's Alan Scott's kid.
Yeah.
It's weird that they all have different last names.
Do they have different mothers? Is that the deal?
I think there's a reason for it. Like, they might have been secret kids. I honestly don't know.
Oh, they were separated at birth. They're twins.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Wild.
Yeah. He's got, like, a pretty cool costume. He looks like the Shadow Link version of Mr. Miracle.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a cool, like, shadowy costume for a guy with shadowy powers. Mm-hmm. But he's also got like 20 other powers.
Yeah, he's got like weird shadow powers.
But he can also fly, and he's super strong, and he can change his size, which I guess you can chalk up some of that to being shadowy, but like it's a lot.
He's got like Martian Manhunter powers. It's just whatever.
He is sort of like a Ersatz Martian Manhunter.
I just looked it up so I could check and see what his powers were. He can also come in contact with your shadow and cause you emotional agony.
Oh boy.
That's a weird power. Not a fan of Obsidian. Sorry, everybody.
Okay. So we're saying below Jade. Is he in like Jason Todd territory?
I think Jason Todd's better. I mean, he is one where he shows up and I'm like, okay, I guess I'm reading this comic.
All right, how does he measure up to Professor Zoom, the Reverse Flash? Or Puck?
Professor Zoom, the Reverse Flash. Now, that's the first Reverse Flash. That's Eobard Thawne. That's not Hunter Zolomon.
That's not Hunter Zolomon, no.
I would say worse than both of those, because I'd definitely say worse than Doomsday. Because Doomsday is so stupid, he's great.
Do you like him more than Man-Bat?
That's a tough one, buddy. Okay. Number 314 on this list is Vibe.
Yeah.
Is Obsidian Paco better or worse than Vibe?
But this is Paco.
This is Paco. This is OG Vibe. This is Detroit Vibe.
Yeah. New Vibe, I think I would put above Obsidian. But Paco, I think, could go below.
Okay, then in that case, I think he goes at 313 between the Key and the Polka Dot Man.
Okay, so be it. So be it.
Obsidian, Todd Rice at number 313.
Next on Jordan's list is Hector Hall, Dr. Fate.
Man, I feel bad because I said I loved all these DC Legacy characters. But we're like not talking about like Jaime Reyes or Kyle Rayner. Connor Hawk's already on the list.
Yeah.
Hector Hall. Now that's Dr. Fate of circa 1999, right?
These are all Roy Thomas characters.
Wait, which one's Hector Hall? Because I might be thinking of the wrong one.
He's the Roy Thomas All-Star Squadron Dr. Fate.
Okay. I was thinking of...
He's Hawk Girl and Hawkman's son.
Yes. Hector Hall is confusing as hell.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, because he was Sandman at one point.
Right.
And he's also, like, he's Hawkman and Hawkgirl's kid.
He was also in Infinity Inc. So far, these are all Infinity Inc. characters.
Yeah, this was... I feel like I was lied to. I mean, he's like... This is the Dr. Fate who becomes Dr. Fate in JSA.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because he's not Dr. Fate before that. Oh, no. God, he's confusing.
He's very confusing, because not only was he Sandman at one point, he was Silver Scarab.
Uh-huh.
And he has a reincarnation cycle where he has different parents.
Right, because his first parents are Hawkman and Hawkgirl. His second parents are Hawk and Dove.
Yes.
Then he becomes Dr. Fate after they kill off Jared Stevens, the man called Fate, who melted down the helmet of Fate and made it into a knife. So that's he's right. Really, like, one of our dudes.
He's one of our dudes.
Yeah.
Hector Matt, Hall, not so much.
Matt, quick question about Jared Stevens. Do he vape?
Oh, you know it, boy.
Yeah, 1,000,000%.
Hector Hall. 1,000,000%. I don't think Hector Hall vapes.
Hector Hall does not vape. That's another strike against him. I'm about ready to put this dude as low as we can because I'm tired of thinking about him.
He's deeply confusing.
I would say he is arguably the least of the Doctor's Fate. Because we've got Kent Nelson, who's the original.
Right. OG.
OG. Then we've got the sort of combined Dr. Fate, the J.M. DeMatteis Dr. Fate.
There are so many Doctors Fate.
Yes.
Goodness gracious.
There's Khalid Nassur, who's very good in the most recent Dr. Fate that our guest this week, Dylan Todd, did the logo for.
That's right. There's Linda Strauss.
Yeah. Again, that's JSA. There's that time Martian Manhunter put on the Dr. Fate helmet. That was pretty cool. Yeah. In Justice Annual number one.
So many Doctors Fate. Okay.
Yeah. And I would put Jared Stevens above this dude, and most people would say he is the least, but no. Hector Hall is the least.
Okay. Is he above Obsidian or not?
Oh, lower.
How about, do you like him as much as Jericho? How about his dad, Hank Hall?
Well, Hank Hall sucks real
second,
bad.
Second dad, Hank Hall.
Talk about Extant?
Yeah.
No, he's not that bad. But he's worse than Cluemaster. He's worse than the Mime.
Okay, we've got Superboy Prime. We've got Ten-Eyed Man. We've got Nermal. We've got Arsenal.
Oof.
Arsenal's arguably better. Let's put him between Arsenal and Hank Hall.
All right. Dr. Fate, Hector Hall. It was in the list at number 334.
This is going to be the last one from Jordan's list that we rank, because we've already ranked one of these.
Okay.
The last one on his list is The Flash, Wally West, who we've already ranked.
Yeah. He's good. He's very good. He's at number 9. He's at the top 10.
Here's one you're also going to like. Impulse, Bart Allen.
Boy. Here's the problem, Matt. If we're ranking Impulse, Impulse goes high. If we're ranking Bart Allen...
Who was also Kid Flash.
Who was also Flash.
The Flash, yes.
Then that's going to drop him a little bit. So do we have to, like...
It's got to be everything.
Got to be everything. Okay, well, Impulse rules.
Yeah.
Impulse was a great idea. Great costume. Like, one of the best of those Legion sandwich suit costumes. I love those suits. They're so good.
Yeah.
Great stories. One of my all-time favorite single issues, Impulse number 3, where he gets in a fight with his entire school. Everything after that kind of goes off the rails. When Geoff Johns decides he should have red hair, which he does not have, when things start to go off the rails for him.
When he gets into, like, dark Teen Titans stories, where Deathstroke is, like, destroying his knees.
Yeah, when he gets kneecapped, that's pretty rough.
And he has to get a new artificial knee.
Yeah.
Ooh, boy.
And then his tenure as Flash is bad. Then there was a new 52 Bart Allen who we're not counting because he was not the same guy. Like, new 52 Bart Allen was not even Bart Allen.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And now there's another Bart Allen.
Yeah.
Who is nominally that new 52 Bart Allen, but is the old Bart Allen again, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. Confusing.
It's when he gets into that Teen Titans orbit that it makes him, like, not as fun.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not a Young Justice guy. You know that.
Yeah.
It wasn't my favorite book. But I feel like Young Justice didn't break anybody. And I feel like that Teen Titans run did.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, it's not John's. It's later in that run, but that Teen Titans run is when Wonder Dog ate Marvin and Wendy.
That's right. Ugh. Oh boy.
Hey, I'm gonna say this, and I know that all it's gonna take is one good run to prove me wrong. But here's my hot take.
Okay.
The Teen Titans are bad, and they should stop making Teen Titans comics. Exceptions being the original Bob Haney Teen Titans and that delightful cartoon.
This is not that surprising coming from you.
The new Teen Titans hater has logged on.
All right. Given all of those different aspects of Bart Allen,
he's still good. Like, if he shows up, I'm going to be excited that, like, if the real Bart Allen shows back up, like, if Impulse comes back, which stop calling him Kid Flash, call him fucking Impulse. Like, bring back Impulse. It's a great name.
Like, is he like Jaime Reyes good?
Jaime Reyes doesn't have the lows, but he also doesn't have the highs.
Yeah.
Jaime Reyes is good, but like, he's not as good and he's not as bad. I mean, I feel like Bart Allen could be a top 100 character, but then like right out of the top 100, we have Michelangelo, Gambit. He's not as good as Gambit. Talk about Rembrandt, Etienne LeBeau.
I think I probably wouldn't put him above Damian Wayne, who's at 106. But could he go above Jean Grey?
Okay, I'm looking down the list. We got a top heavy list. We got a strong list.
A lot of good characters up top.
A character that I think is comparable in terms of highs and lows, Cassandra Cain, aka Black Bat, aka Orphan, aka Batgirl.
Right.
I think Impulse, Bart Allen, goes around there.
How about we do this? Let's split the difference between Kyle Rayner and Jon Stewart.
Okay.
And put Impulse between them.
All right. So I'm listing him as Impulse. Bart Allen, a.k.a. Kid Flash, enters the list at number 120.
That's going to do it for our list for Jordan. Jordan, thank you for that list. If you would like to send us a panel president list, you can do so at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send every story ever lists, listener questions. If you want to drop us a line about anything else, like sponsoring the show maybe, you can do it there. Be sure also to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. You can also ask us questions on our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. Also, check us out on Apple Podcasts. If you like the show, please go leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more reviews we get there, the more we are featured. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you where you can find us online. For me, I've made it so easy. All you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net to find links to all my stuff. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
Everybody can find all of my stuff by going to the-isb.com, where you'll find links to all the comics that I write, all the columns that I write here and there around the web, and other podcasts that I do. Also, go to your local comic book store and pick up Kiss vs. Army of Darkness, which is out now, and Infinity Countdown Darkhawk, which are some comics that I'm writing along with Chad Bowers. And if you're coming to Charlotte, get them signed.
Chris, before we get out of here, you did have a good cause that you wanted to talk about this week.
That's right, Matt. It is June, which is Pride Month. So we wanted to put a spotlight on good causes that have to do with the LGBTQ community. And one that came to my attention, thanks to one of the co-hosts of the Jim Jam, actually, now the Jim Jammer RPG podcast, is called Rainbow Railroad. It is a Canadian charity. You can find it at rainbowrailroad.ca. And what they do is they are meant to help members of the LGBT community get out of countries or places where they're having a really hard time. I'm sure you've heard about what's going on in Chechnya right now, for instance, and help to resettle them in places that will be more friendly to them, specifically, I believe, Canada. It's a good cause. It really does help people out. You can absolutely go and donate a few dollars at rainbowrailroad.ca, and we would absolutely encourage you to do so. You can also donate like frequent flyer miles, because that helps with getting plane tickets for everyone as well.
Yes, please go do that. And Chris, now that we have done all there is to do, we're going to wrap up War Rocket Ajax number 406. How do you think we did?
How do I think we did?
Yeah.
Usually that's what I ask you.
Well, I'm turning it around this time.
What I ask you... What IHQ? What HQC? I think we HQC'd it.
Chris, you solved my riddle. You solved it. You may now enter the treasure chamber.
Nice. Have a great week, everybody.
We love you.
Yeah! Flash.